We made this.
You need a doctor?
I am a doctor.
I should have died years ago.
People all over the world have my disease.
Amir.
To find a cure, we have to push the boundaries, take the risks.
If you're gonna run,
do it now.
People are strange.
Dr. Michael Morbius? You've been missing for 2 months.
When you're a stranger.
Then you were found on a container ship that washed up off of Long Island.
Faces look ugly when you're alone.
Johnny!
What did you do to yourself, Doctor?
I wish I knew.
I went from dying to being more alive than ever.
It worked.
Not exactly.
I have increased strength and speed.
And some form of bat radar.
What else can I do?
There are limits. There has to be.
There's something inside of me.
Wants to hunt
and consume blood.
Michael.
When you're strange,
can you control it?
I don't know.
Half the city wants to kill you.
We haven't had anything this good since that thing in San Francisco.
The other half wants to control you.
Hey, Dr. Mike, you and I should stay in touch.
I'd do anything to save a life. But I don't know what I'm capable of.
You save lives, you don't take them.
Are you here to heal the world? Or to destroy it?
I'm just kidding. It's Dr. Michael Morbius at your service.
Welcome to Podcast 616 on the We Made This Network, a place where we talk about everything in the Marvel Universe. I'm your host, Dan Owen, editor of framerated.co.uk, and today we're talking about the comic book movie Morbius, starring Jared Leto and Matt Smith, which has finally arrived in cinemas after extensive delays caused by the coronavirus pandemic. This is also a special crossover episode with Real Talk, which I host, where we discuss new films at the cinema, on streaming and on disc. This installment is actually marking Real Talk's 50th episode, days after our one-year anniversary, so if you haven't listened yet, please click the link in the show notes and dive into Real Talk's archive of reviews. So, joining me to inject some bat serum is Baz Greenland from the TARDIS Crew podcast and Craig McKenzie from the Rarely Going Animated Star Trek podcast. How are you doing, both of you?
Doing good. Doing good. Getting over a bout of whatever it was Morbius had.
All right. Worse than COVID.
Yeah, I'm not as bad, but I have literally just come out of Morbius about an hour ago, so this is very, very fresh in my mind for me.
Okay, excellent. Yep, so you're on the kind of post-cinema screening high that you always have when you leave the cinema. You feel 10 feet tall.
It did something, yes.
Sort of done podcasts with you both individually, but not together. So it's a new kind of dynamic here on the podcast. Yeah, we're here to talk about Morbius, the latest Sony Marvel movie, which has been long delayed. Yeah, it's taken quite a few years to finally arrive, but we're finally here. So for those who don't know, it's all about a biochemist called Michael Morbius, who tries to cure himself of a rare blood disease, but he inadvertently infects himself with a form of vampirism instead. The age-old story.
As you do, yeah.
So, obviously, the latest in Sony's kind of attempt to... I don't really know what they're doing, to be honest, because I keep saying it's their attempt to do their own cinematic universe, but it's kind of their own thing, but yet it's tenuously connected to the MCU.
in various ways. So it's kind of like an offshoot of that. So it's, I don't know, it's very confusing, but it's kind of in the same universe as Venom, essentially. Yeah. So you have the two Venom movies, now you've got Morbius, and I'm sure there will be more kind of third and fourth tier supervillains that they'll get from a top Trumps card set or something. I don't know how they decide.
Kraven the Hunter and Madame Web are the two that are coming.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, with Dakota Johnson, isn't it, doing Madame Web? Yeah.
They keep hoovering up interesting talent for these films. I don't know what they have on them. I don't know what they know about them that forces them into these roles.
Yeah, we need another Sony leak. Remember that leak that happened? Yeah. We'll get all the gossip.
What information do they have about Dakota Johnson that means that she agreed to sign up to this thing?
Yeah. Who's doing Kraven the Hunter? Do you know?
Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
And they recently cast, what's her name, from West Side Story, who just won the Oscar.
Yeah, Ariana DeBose.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a Spider-Man universe without Spider-Man, which I'm not quite sure works.
Or maybe with Spider-Man, we'll talk about it because...
Yeah. I've got some couple of theories about that, maybe, but they could be complete on a BS. But hey, we'll see as we go on.
Excellent, yeah. So how do you feel then about how it's going so far for Sony in terms of this little pocket universe that they've got going here? So the two Venom films and now Morbius, but how do you think it's going, be honest?
I think it's a mixed bag. The Venom films are fun. The first one's better than the second one, I think, but they're both very rushed and of a lower quality than you would expect from something like the MCU. They feel like they came out like 10, 15 years ago. It feels like the kind of caliber of when Ghost Rider was coming out, somewhere along that level. So it's Tom Hardy's having a blast in this Venom role for some reason. It's fine, but I don't think it's necessarily worth getting fully invested in. This is another one where it's just, if people are calling it one of the worst films ever made and things like that, I really hate this hyperbolic crap that you get on the internet associated with this, because I just thought this was forgettable. I didn't feel like it did enough to make me hate it, which is worse than doing something to make me hate it, because at least if I hate it, there's a reaction, rather than coming out thinking, okay, I've seen that, and probably don't ever need to think about it ever again, apart from the fact that I'm going to be talking about it on a podcast. But after I've done that, never need to think about it ever again. So that's a worse sin, because you'll just forget about it.
How about you, Baz?
I'm largely the same. I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Craig. They feel like movies that came out 10, 15 years ago before the MCU was a big thing. And I think we are so spoilt now with good superhero movies, I think with Marvel. I mean, yeah, some vary in quality, but you know, you get the great ones like Ragnarok and some of the Avengers movies, and some that are more middling. But generally, they're a good standard, good quality. And I always enjoy an MCU movie.
There's a minimum standard you can expect, isn't there? There's not...
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll never be worse than you would expect, really. Yeah. Well, yeah, even then, that's competent. You know what I mean? You're never going to get your Fantastic Four, the Josh Trank one. You're never going to get anything like that that is just so blatantly poorly made. Yeah, there's competence there, and you don't necessarily get that in other studios making superhero stuff.
Whereas I think with the Sony movies, I mean, like you, I enjoyed the Venom movies. I think they're fun. I think Tom Hardy is good in the role. I enjoy the... the banter with Venom. I think it's always fun. I think that was the best bit about the second movie as well, was that every time you get him arguing with Venom and them kind of attacking each other, and that is generally entertaining. I think that's good. And I don't think this movie had that. There was I watched it with my family, and we were on the bus home, and my wife asked, so what was the best bit of the movie? And they kind of went, I don't know. And that was it. There was nothing that really stood out. There were some moments which I liked about it, which we'll talk about. But it was okay. I mean, the Venom movies are ones that I think 15 years ago would be good superhero movies, or kind of these weird sort of anti-hero superhero movies that you had. Now they're just middling. And I think this is the same. And there's nothing... the trouble I have is when you're doing something, which is, in this example, it's Spider-Man villains without Spider-Man, you kind of go, oh, what's the point? Because it's like, it feels like you're missing the core ingredient there. And don't worry, we've had many Spider-Man movies, and I enjoy the Spider-Man movies, and Tom Holland is great as Spider-Man, and I loved No Way Home. But I kind of feel like it's just dancing around the fact they don't have Spider-Man. And, you know, and there are, isn't there a Spider-Woman movie they're talking about as well? So there are like heroes out there which they might use, but it just feels like it's kind of, there's this big void in the middle that we're just kind of not talking about, and it's getting on with these kind of characters. I mean, I remember Morbius from the 90s Spider-Man cartoon. Back in the 90s, I used to watch every Saturday morning the Spider-Man and the X-Men cartoon. So I remember Morbius from that. But again, he was a character from the Spider-Man cartoon. That's the only only kind of knowledge I really have of the character. He's a vampire that isn't quite a bad guy, that kind of, I assume, comes into conflict with Spider-Man, but also maybe helps him at times as well. So it's that's all we know about. But there's nothing exciting, nothing really gripping. And I think it's a shame because MCU does some good stuff with characters, and particularly the spin-off stuff as well, where it's not this kind of top-tier superheroes, but they can do interesting stories with them. I just don't think, particularly with Morbius, there's anything really that interesting about it to make you remember. Yeah, like you, I think, Craig, I think once this podcast's done, I might not think about it again.
The thing about Morbius, though, is you can disconnect him from Spider-Man more easily than you can with, say, Venom, because even though he first appeared in a Spider-Man comic, his origin really has nothing to do with Spider-Man as such. It's in the cartoon that they drew the link, because in the 90s cartoon, it was he experimented with a sample of Spider-Man's blood and then did that to himself. But that's not there in the source material originally, so you can get away with it. And there are other characters you can get away with. Madam Web, don't know how you're going to do that. Craven the Hunter, again, you can get away with it, but I don't know why you want to see that character if Spider-Man's nowhere near him. It doesn't make much sense. But yeah, this universe of Spider-Man characters without Spider-Man in it is a confusing notion. It really is.
Yeah, I think Morbius, like you say, Craig, it's a bit easier to understand why they want to do a Morbius movie without Spider-Man. It does kind of make sense. I think there was talk of him being a villain for Blade 2 at one point, I seem to remember.
He's in a deleted scene in the first Blade film as well. The deleted ending, it look over and there's some guy standing there and it's supposed to be Morbius, but then what happened was they didn't have the rights to say Morbius, so they had to cut that scene. But it could have just been anybody. It doesn't look like anything, so it's a very strange sort of little deleted cameo that's quite funny.
One thing I would say about Morbius, though, is this, you mentioned this hype going around. My expectations were through the floor going to this movie, which is actually why I enjoyed some of it. There were some bits that I quite liked about it, and we'll talk about those. But the idea of this, it's the worst Marvel movie ever made. No, it's not. It's really not. It's actually, it's an okay movie. I enjoyed some of it. There were some good performances in there, some disappointing moments, you know, some forgettable moments, but it is far, far, far from the worst kind of comic book related movie I've ever seen.
I think I didn't like it, essentially. like you, though, yeah, I did go in thinking it was going to be like an absolute disaster and an absolute terrible movie, difficult to sit through. I was going to start fidgeting after half an hour, and I didn't really find that to be the case, because I kind of quite enjoy an origin story in general. You know, this kind of went through the motions, but I can kind of enjoy it, you know, on some level. The idea of a tortured genius becoming a superhero, or is he a villain, and as you know, and this kind of thing. But as it went along, it just got more and more generic. That's what kind of really disappointed me, is it wasn't too bad at the start. When it got to the point where he was getting his powers and he was sort of leaping around his laboratory and working out what he can do with echolocation and this kind of thing, I was quite relatively into it at that stage. It wasn't that bad, and then it just got more and more boring, really. And then once the kind of villain is introduced as to what the situation is there, and it just kind of didn't really work. I think a lot was chopped out of this movie, I was picking up on, because there was a few things with Matt Smith's character, who's his adopted brother in this, that didn't kind of really work for me. It felt like there was maybe some scenes cut out to, you know, make it a bit of a shorter film than it maybe was or something. It didn't quite flow, that element of the story. And then when Matt Smith eventually becomes the villain, there's quite a lot there missing between them as characters, and so it didn't kind of emotionally work. You're supposed to feel like this is kind of their brothers, and it's like a big tragedy what's happening here, but I didn't really feel anything, to be honest.
No, yeah. That's a shame. Yeah, I think for me that there were two big positives of the movie. That I found that opening like 20-25 minutes before it becomes Morbius probably the most compelling, engaging part of the storyline. When you see them as children, you understand their connection to each other, the disease they've got, what he's trying to do. It wasn't the most exciting narrative in the world, but I was kind of drawn into their story, and those moments between Morbius and what's the character,
Milo.
Yeah, I thought they were good, and there was a little bit of a connection, and Matt Smith was good, and I think even Jared Leto wasn't too bad as well. So I was invested a little bit in that storyline, enough to kind of be engaged what was going on. So I thought the opening was probably the best bit before he becomes Morbius. And the other bit, I think the best bit was Matt Smith. I think Matt Smith was a lot of fun when he was a vampire, but there was barely any of it, and that was really, really frustrated. There's that moment when he kind of reveals himself and he's killing the cops, just like kind of moon dance thing. It's like, this is fun. This is him basically full on becoming a villain, and it's great and it's entertaining. And then you don't see any more of that, and it feels like I wanted to watch Matt Smith as Vampire Milo more than I wanted to watch Jared Leto as Michael Morbius.
Did you read that interview with Matt Smith where he talked about how he has no idea what his character's motivation was, so he just played the script? He didn't know what he was doing.
I mean, you know, I'm a big Doctor Who fan. I've run my own Doctor Who podcast. Matt Smith is one of my favourite actors to have played the Doctor. I think he's great. When he's doing great material, he's really, really good. And I thought he was probably the best thing in the movie. But even so, the fact that he had to play it straight as per the script shows something. You know, he could have done so much more with that role. And, there, you know, he's entertaining, he's engaging. You know, he does that kind of villainous thing very well. But there just wasn't anywhere near as much as there could have been. And it's a real shame because I think they wasted him. I mean, there's a lot of wasted actors maybe in this movie, and I think Matt Smith is definitely one of them, because we could have had a really great villain, and it was an okay villain because we didn't get much of Milo as the vampire at all.
Great villain trajectory for the two Doctors, isn't it? You've got Kilgrave for David Tennant, the celebrated fan favourite villain in the MCU, or not the MCU anymore, and then you've got Matt Smith as some vampire guy that you won't remember.
Yeah, it's just a shame. it's a real shame, because I think Milo could have been a really great, memorable villain, and I think he's relegated to two or three scenes when you get to see that.
Yeah, he was the only character, I think, the actor who saw the camp potential of the movie, at least.
Yeah,
because in that scene where he was bare-chested dancing around, and there's a few other moments where it was kind of fun. I don't think Jared Leto really operates that way, that he didn't really see the potential of any of that. He was playing it quite straight, I thought.
Quite tortured, yeah.
Yeah, he was in a few moments from the trailer that was a bit more lighthearted, that was cut out of the actual movie. So they just kind of thought, well, he's not very good with the comedy, Jared. We'll just get rid of all of that and just stick to the straight drama that he's bringing to it, or trying to bring to it.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a bit of a shame. I mean, a bit of a disconnect with him and Matt Smith as actors as well. I think their style is very different. Mm. And he's very method, isn't he, Jared Leto? And I think I actually read that Matt Smith said he never actually saw Jared Leto on set. He was always Morbius. He went that far. So, yeah, bit strange. So in terms of the storyline then, I've sort of mentioned it was an origin story, but so I think that's the biggest failing of the movie, is that it's so generic. Mm. I just don't think you can get away with that nowadays. You have to have something a bit different to your movie if they can't rely on the interconnectedness like the MCU can. So they connect, the MCU and Marvel, they can experiment with these lesser-known characters like Shang-Chi and Eternals and all that, because people are going to turn up for the connections to the wider universe, whereas Sony don't really have that to draw people, because no one's particularly interested with Venom, and they didn't even lean on Venom at all, really, apart from some mentions of San Francisco at times and stuff like that. So it was kind of strange. You can't really get away with a weak story, and the script here is by Matt Sazama and Burke Sharpless, who I've never heard of, but they did Gods of Egypt and Last Witch Hunter.
Did one of them not work on Dracula Untold as well? Because there are elements in this film that are directly ripped from that film, such as him feeding on the woman to give him strength to fight the villain at the end. That happens in Dracula Untold.
Yeah.
And even the general beats of the origin are very similar. So I do wonder, maybe they only gave him a credit because they just took a script and crossed out Dracula and wrote Morbius instead.
Yeah. I can only imagine. I was going to say that they looked at Dracula Untold and thought, well, okay, these guys have done a vampire thing before. We'll give this to them. But I just don't understand what the thinking really with Sony is. Why would they give these guys a go?
I like Dracula Untold, actually. It's better than this.
Yes, that's true.
I think that's it. There are two issues. One, it's very predictable. All the big twists. The fact that the reason that Matt Smith wasn't really in the trailer is probably because they were hiding the big twist. I was like, yeah, it's obvious what it was when it happened. Secondly, it could have been really atmospheric or really camp. I think Matt Smith plays into that, but there's none of that. There was stuff that should have been great. Now, I like things like the use of red light in a lot of the cityscapes to kind of have this kind of slightly gothic vampire-y thing to it. But there were nice little occasional touches, but they didn't have the atmosphere intention. And also, it wasn't camp enough. So between the two, it was middling. It never really kind of found its footing. Shang-Chi is a prime example of a movie that blew me away. It was an origin movie. We've seen so many origin movies done time and time again, it's really hard to do an origin movie now and be really excited, because you know, actually, the generally things like Captain America, for example, the big stuff comes later. So when you're watching an origin story, you think, well, this is almost like the prelude to the fun stuff. And Shang-Chi blew me away. I know it's an MCU movie, so that caliber is immediately higher. But it's one of my favourite MCU movies. I absolutely adored that movie. And there's so much in it that I loved. Whereas this is an origin movie where you're like, oh, I don't care. It's very basic. It's very predictable. There's no tension, no drama. And yeah, it just, I mean, maybe I feel like I'm talking the movie down the more I talk about it, actually. But it's there are bits I liked in it. But for an origin movie, you know, doing a vampire movie, you can do so much with that. I you know, Blade 1 and 2, for example, I love those movies. And, you know, I love, you know, I'm a fan of, I mean, from Buffy the Vampire Slayer to Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula. So, you know, I love a good vampire movie or vampire TV series if it's done well. And it's had the potential to do that, but it completely missed that mark, in my opinion.
It does kind of work better if you think of it as a vampire film than a superhero film, yeah, at times. One of the main problems for me, it's a big villain problem, like we've mentioned about the fact that Morbius is supposed to be a Spider-Man villain, you know, traditionally. But also, I think with these movies, Sony obviously trying to develop their own cinematic universe using super villains, but they don't really want their villains to be villainous.
No.
So you have Venom, who's kind of like an anti-hero kind of thing. But I know there's a bit of a, you know, that's kind of acceptable for where that character's gone in the comic books at times. So that's okay. But with this one, you know, I know you mentioned, Craig, that he's sometimes on the side of, you know, Spider-Man, or you know, he's not an out-and-out villain, I don't think. But with main character being a villain, they've got to come up with a villain to compete with the villain, you know, if that makes sense. So, and they always come out with the idea of having just another version of him who's even worse.
Yeah.
So with Venom, you have that, don't you? In both movies, you know, it's basically another Venom who's even worse than, you know, the good Venom. And in this one, same thing. You just have another Morbius, another vampire in Milo. So I think that's another problem, is that you just have the same character twice, you know, fighting him, you know, Morbius fighting himself in this instance.
Yeah, I think so. The trouble is, I think this was the makings of a great movie. You've got that kind of, I know it's been done time and time again, but if done right, this brotherly conflict, you know, it was all very predictable the way it was done, but the idea that they've struggled together, you know, that they've lived this kind of, they've lived with the disease all their lives, they've bonded through their experiences, and then they basically, you know, brother against brother, can be, you know, Loki and Thor, for example, can be done really, really well. There was a makings of a great movie here, and it's got none of that excitement or energy that it should have. So I think it is a problem that they are skating around not having any heroes in this universe. It's all anti-heroes, which can be interesting to watch, but I think it's worth, if it's on occasion, it's fine. When all you've got is a universe of anti-heroes, then, well, what is there are no heroes there. It doesn't really work. And there's absence of Spider-Man again. It just feels like, yeah, it was just missing that. And it had the makings of being either a great vampire movie or kind of a great kind of internal conflict between the hero and villain. But I just feel like it missed that mark.
I think it's like Dan said, it's been cut to the bone, this film. You can practically see where they've sheared stuff off.
Yeah.
It doesn't flow naturally. The storytelling just doesn't work. So I think maybe what you've talked about there, the brotherly conflict or pseudo-brotherly conflict, was in there at some point.
Yeah.
And got kicked out. Because there was a couple of things I picked up on that might have been interesting as themes. They don't qualify as themes because the film does nothing with them. But they were doing addiction, or it seemed like they were touching on that, because you've got Morbius, who is trying to beat his addiction and is tortured by it, and then you've got Matt Smith, who's given into his addiction. And even if you look at some of the cinematography, the Morbius scenes, they are shot like he's in a crack den, you know, there's very dark and gloomy, whereas the Morbius scenes, particularly the one where he's dancing, the Milo scene, even the one where he's dancing about, particularly, is very well lit. It's almost like that, yeah, drug-induced glow, you know, the while it feels great before it becomes awful, that part. You see that in a lot of addiction films, and yeah, it's not interesting or original, but it was something, and gone. It's not there at all. It's just suggested.
I suppose Morbius is like he's on heroin, and Milo's like he's on cocaine, almost.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. We'll go through the cast then, one at a time. Could be interesting. So Jared Leto as Michael Morbius, main star of the movie. Bit of a divisive actor. You know, people forget that, you know, about 10 years ago or something, he was a fairly liked indie actor. He didn't do huge movies or anything, but people remembered him from Fight Club and other things that were a bit more in the public eye. But he's kind of made his name with indie movies, really. And then he kind of transitioned out of that a little bit with Suicide Squad was the main thing, I think, when he played the Joker. And that kind of massively backfired on him. And since then, every role he's taken has been either forgettable, like in Blade Runner 2049, or just not very good and not very interesting, like in the Little Things. I think he played a serial killer, and that wasn't very good. And then more recently, House of Gucci. He's coming from some stick with that. I think he got a Razzie, didn't he, or a nomination for a Razzie. So he's kind of a divisive character or actor, and he's here as Michael Morbius. And like I said, I don't think he was a bad choice for this. I think he's got a good look to him. I think he suits the character in that sense, and he was okay. I just think he doesn't have many gears, does he? He's stuck to this one thing all the way through, and it kind of needed a bit more levity or a bit more fun to it. And I don't think he's capable of that, or he's not interested in that. And he played it very tortured and dark and serious, and I think that was a bit of a mistake. What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, I would agree. He doesn't have much to work with, or they've maybe cut the stuff they had to work with, so you don't see that range, because we know he has it. I mean, I've seen Dallas Buyers Club. He's great in that. That was the one he got the Oscar for, wasn't it? And Lord of War with Nicolas Cage, he was great in that too. Those are the two main things I think of when I hear the name Jared Leto, and I think, oh yeah, cool. And then obviously Suicide Squad, where his behaviour was unacceptable on set. Everybody said, what's this guy doing? He's creeping us all out. He's the Joker. It's like, no, calm down. We're just having lunch. We don't need this. but he was fine here. He carried the film well enough. I believed what he was putting across. It was the little moments of levity that stood out to me. The bit where he says, I am Venom. Just, okay, where did you get that sense of humour? You've never had that up until this point. I don't see where that came from. And there's a couple of bits in the trailer that you see he cracks a joke now and again. The Venom joke's supposed to be longer. It was in the trailer. It was a bit longer where he says, nah, I'm kidding. I'm Michael Morbius or whatever. But not a lot there. He has that romance plot, which is, again, 15 years ago, you needed that romance plot in every superhero film. It's just there because it needs to be there, even though it doesn't need to be there. But I didn't buy that either. Just didn't really buy any of it. And I thought his physicality was good early on when he was playing when he was suffering from the rare blood disease and walking about in crutches and stuff. I believe that the physicality, as I said, was good.
I quite like how he had a black coat with the crutches. It made him look a bit like a bat.
Yeah.
Kind of moving along. I quite like that image, actually.
And, yeah, it's like a bat walking before it flies. Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. So how about you, Baz, for Jared?
He was fine. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't a terrible performance by any means compared to some of the other stuff we've talked about. It was okay, but it was very kind of almost one note. It was very tortured, and it worked for some of the movie. I think, yeah, the physicality again, that those opening scenes with Smith and Leto when they were both suffering from the disease before they became vampires was actually much more interesting. About the physicality of their struggles, you saw that, and I think you saw a little bit of that connection with them. But that's probably the only time you really had any sense of connection with him. As soon as he became Morbius, he kind of lost all that, and that romance subplot again, there was absolutely no chemistry with Adira Ajono, who plays Martine Bancroft. I thought there was no chemistry at all there, so I struggled a bit with that as well. He just the best stuff was there with the early stuff before he becomes Morbius. He looked good in the role, but I didn't, there wasn't any levity, as you said, to really kind of be compelled, really engage with the character. You're watching him deal with the torture of what's happening, really, and that was it.
Yeah, he was kind of sympathetic but not likable.
Yeah.
That's how I'd say it. It was. But yeah, it's interesting you mentioned about the love interest, Martine Bancroft, played by Adria Arjona, who's in Good Omens. I spent the whole film thinking, who is that actress? I thought it was Isa Gonzalez, actually, from Baby Driver for a while. And then it's she was in Good Omens.
They went for her after they asked Isa Gonzalez, she said no.
She's the kind of actress like third tier down, I suppose.
She was in Pacific Rim Uprising. She was in that.
Oh, well, yeah. Another masterpiece there. but she was, like you said, she was supposed to be the love interest, but there wasn't, like you say, anything really going on there, really. On paper, maybe she was a love interest, but there wasn't not much of a romance there or a connection, and it didn't really work. I mean, that's normally like a big part of these kind of movies, isn't it? That's the kind of, she's like the MJ character, if you like, to his Spider-Man, you know, Peter Parker, and she's going to get put in, you know, into danger and all the rest of it. And that kind of happened, but you weren't really invested in them as a couple, so you didn't really care. At times, I forgot they actually were romantically linked, and I just thought she was just his partner at the lab.
Yeah, I would have thought that'd be more interesting, actually, if she was, if it was more platonic relationship, I think would have worked better, actually. Because the one thing, her performance was fine. It wasn't bad. But it wasn't an amazing performance either. It was just okay for the film. And I thought, again, you believed her as this scientist. So that was the one bit that she had going for her. So if they'd done more with that, then just had it kind of... I know they use that in the movie and she's helping Morbius, but I don't know. I just didn't really buy their relationship so much. It was just that, you know, she was there. She was a scientist. She was very good and very intelligent what she did. And that was really it.
No, she becomes a vampire at the end, doesn't she, though? Or that's
So predictable, so utterly predictable. And yeah, the whole thing about the counting down of when, with the point when you can't use the fake blood anymore, kind of just stopped. And I'm assuming that's because the end fed on at the end, as you mentioned. But that it was a whole big subplot running through the movie, and then just, we're going to have some bats in the movie instead, and then a big showdown. So yeah, it kind of felt like some of the kind of possibly slightly more meaty material there was just kind of just shoved aside for a kind of more generic showdown.
So just refresh my memory with that, actually, right? Because I think I've forgotten exactly how this worked. So with the artificial blood, it gives him like 6 hours where he's got his full powers and he's okay. And it was gradually reducing, wasn't it? So it's down to like 4 hours or something towards the end. So if he has the red blood or normal human blood, it lasts longer. Yeah, so he's got the same powers for longer, but the same issue happens. It's not that he becomes worse as a person, is it, when he has the red blood, is it?
An argument could be made for both. Because if he has human blood, then the bloodthirst maybe takes over. But the film doesn't explain it.
Yeah. It was a bit confusing at times. Because I was just thinking, well, what's going on? Also, I was thinking, what's the difficulty of having the red? Because it's not like human blood is like in short supply. He doesn't have to go around killing people. He can just get red blood, normal blood from a hospital or something. You know, it's not like go to a blood bank.
He had a room full of it.
Yeah, yes.
I don't understand what was going on there. Maybe something got lost in the scripting or something between drafts.
And did he have to be human blood as well? I mean, I'm thinking of Angel now as a prime example when he would have pig's blood, but also he would get blood from like blood banks and stuff. So, you know, there are ways he could get human blood without having to go and kill people. I mean, killing people is the easiest way, and obviously Milo went straight for the kill, but he could, and maybe that's what the sequel's going to be about, if there's going to be a sequel, I don't know. The film suggests there's going to be one. But it is kind of, the whole thing about the struggle of trying to become the monster Milo would become was like, it was constantly referred to, this countdown, and then just stopped and didn't go anywhere. I kind of felt like that was probably the most compelling part of his storyline, you know, trying not to become the monster that his best friend had become, and yet he didn't really do anything with that.
He doesn't solve it either, although the film tells you that it has, because obviously he's not dead at the end, so all he does is kill Milo and then fly off. But you don't find out what the solution he came up with is. Is he just going to literally drink, because humans can lose a pint without any problems? Is he just going to like stop himself at a pint on every human and then leave? Or does he have to completely drain them of blood? But yeah, he has the... I've forgotten her name now.
Martine.
Yeah, he takes her blood, so he drains her, and then presumably sorts him out for a little while. But there'll come a point where he needs to feed again, and then we already established the blue blood isn't going to work anymore. Mm. Or he's got a couple of uses left. So yeah, what's the solution there? How does he survive? Because I guess a better ending would have been implying that he dies, and then you do the Ang Lee Hulk ending where, oh, look, there he is. He's turned up somewhere.
I think that's it. And that's true with the movie, is that it literally got the point when he flies off at the end and then credits, like, what? That's it? That's the movie done? You just... I couldn't quite... It took me a second to realise the movie had finished. Because I thought, what? But where's the rest of the plot? Don't get me wrong. I was kind of like, okay, well, you've done the main thing. It's done now. It's fine. I'm quite happy to be done now with this movie. But at the same time, I was like, because like you, I was kind of trying to get into the third act. It becomes very kind of one note and predictable. And there's not left to it to really kind of sustain it. But at the same time, I was like, okay, right. He's dealt with Milo now. He flies off. They watch him go. And then credits. Okay, but then spend what seems like half an hour of mid-credit scenes setting up a sequel. So it's like, and it was weird. And it just kind of bugged me. That was the most compelling, along with the brotherly conflict, which wasn't dealt with enough. The other compelling thing was him not becoming the monster who feeds on human blood. And they both just kind of just didn't go anywhere.
So how about Jared Harris, who is in this? Only a small role.
Wasted.
Really.
Absolutely wasted in this. Yeah. He's good.
Yeah, what's he doing here? How did they get him?
Well, that's what I want to know. Again, there's that whole kind of the mentor thing, and there wasn't really any scenes with him and Jared Leto's Michael Morbius. There was stuff as a child briefly, but yeah, you got a sense that he was kind of the part of their lives and was his kind of presence, and the fact that Milo then kills him, it's a big, big thing, but I kind of got that Milo killing him was a kind of a quite a cruel twist. At the same time, I didn't really get that emotional gut punch. That should be like an Uncle Ben moment, and it wasn't, because A, he was barely in the movie, and there wasn't anything to do either. So just, yeah, completely wasted.
Because he has two scenes with Leto, doesn't he? He has one when he's turning down the Nobel Prize, and then the one where he dies. I don't remember any other scene.
I think there was one scene with him and Milo together before Milo got the serum, so it was kind of like very early on. But again...
Yeah, there was a couple with Milo, I remember, but I don't remember many with Morbius. It might just be those two. Maybe there's another one in the middle somewhere, but again, it's not anything.
Yeah, so it got cut out, unfortunately. And this is what damages the movie later, isn't it? Because you don't have that connection when he dies. You don't feel particularly upset about that. And it should really be like a family story, really. It's like two adopted brothers, and he's their surrogate father. You know, it's quite a lot there that you could do, really, to make him emotionally connect. And then you could really go into the third act there with Morbius, you know, against his own brother who's killed his dad.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, there's a huge thing there.
Oh, really, this is Shakespearean level drama. You can really go for this, and it doesn't go, and that's it. And that's what's frustrating in some way about the movie. I wasn't expecting to go that level, but there's a potential for a fantastic movie in here that just doesn't happen.
There's also another little bit of setup as well that they don't do much with. The fact that Matt Smith is the benefactor of Morbius's research. It's mentioned, but he's rich, okay, and he's pretending to be a lawyer. There's all these little things. It's just whatever the scene needs to do, they just throw at you, and they expect you to accept it. And I'm like, I don't know who these people are, so I suppose he could be this, but what difference does it make?
Well, all of Matt Smith's kind of grounding was through the flashback, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't really him. Yeah. He wasn't really given much to do at all. It was just, you had to remember him as a child, really, and with those bullies that he kind of attacks.
Oh, yeah, that's vicious, isn't it? That's the, oh, yeah, he was always vicious, yeah.
Person, yeah, and that kind of thing. And
I had to laugh at the, when Jared Harris says to Morbius, There's a special school in New York for gifted children.
Yeah, I'm assuming there had to be an X-Men reference. It was quite fun, but kind of throwaway at the same time.
Surely,
yeah.
Oh, that would have been really bold if they'd gone down that direction. Yeah, done their own little X-Men thing. Yeah, that'd have been good. So on a very lesser tier then, Tyrese Gibson and Elle Madrigal as the two agents investigating Morbius. So just the fact Tyrese Gibson was in this made me think this is definitely a throwback to the early 2000s. I haven't thought about Tyrese Gibson for about 15 years with Fast and Furious early movies. I don't watch the newer ones.
Yeah, well, he's still there.
Still there, is he? Okay,
He's the funny one. Yeah, he's like the Deadpool of the Fast and Furious universe. He's commenting on how ridiculous it all is.
Yeah, I mean, they have a story where they're like the normal people, you know, looking in on this, on these strange events, and they're investigating. There's room for that kind of a character. Again, it's quite generic, but they could have, like, you know, been something in this movie. I think as a pairing, they were quite interesting. Al Madrigal was quite humorous at times.
See, but I found him completely irritating. I don't know. He was supposed to be the funny guy, and he was basically agent vampire lore exposition, and I don't know. I don't know what to do about Al Madrigal's performance, but I mean, Tyrese Gibson was okay, very, very flat, just like a lot of the movie. He was okay.
See, I thought he was bad. He just wasn't trying. It's almost like he turned up to set and thought, God, this is crap, isn't it? I'm not even going to bother with this. Because every line he delivers, I got the impression of he would rather be anywhere else, which is probably accurate. And maybe in the scenes that he's in, he'd probably rather be anywhere else. But yeah, Al Madrigal's just immediately buys into the fact that this must be vampires. It can't just be weird, gimmicky murderers. Or do we live in a universe where this is common or not? I don't think we do, because the only mention, it's kind of like that weird thing that happened in San Francisco, although it's nothing like it, really.
Exactly. I don't know. I kind of found Agent Rodriguez, Madrigal's character, he was supposed to be the funny guy to Tyrese Gibson's straight man, Estrade. And yeah, Tyrese Gibson looked bored, and Madrigal, I just found the whole tent of humour and the kind of all it's throwing to vampire lore here just really kind of trite and funny. I liked that. I hate it when, like, oh, someone's had their, they've got bite marks on their neck and they've been drained of blood and no one talked about vampires. Because you would. You would absolutely would. So I like that they do go, oh, it's vampire sort of thing, because that's kind of believable. But then it goes to the point where, like, here's that whole that bottle of three times blessed holy water was supposed to be really funny. And I went, oh, God, no, this is terrible. It didn't land for me at all. I'm sorry.
So he's the guy that's the bit of the office wild card, isn't he? Probably. But and it turns out this time he's just kind of right for the first time ever. But
their investigation didn't really go anywhere, did it, either? That was a disappointing thing. I mean, you could have had a movie where it was focused on them even sort of investigating these kind of strange occult-looking murders on the ship earlier on, and then they realise it's like a doctor who's created this serum and becomes a vampire. It could have all been told from their perspective, but...
Yeah, I think you could have cut them in. Wouldn't have done. You could remember that two scenes. There was a couple of scenes when they arrest him for the boat and the murder of the nurse. That was the only bit that I thought they brought anything to the movie, and that was just to have him as kind of on the run from the police afterwards. And that I don't think they brought anything really to the movie at all. I don't think you need them. Or, as you said, they could have had it from their point of view, maybe more interesting to have, you know, seeing it unfold from their point of view. Would have been a more intriguing movie, perhaps.
Okay, so was there anything in the movie that you did enjoy?
Matt Smith, I enjoyed him. I thought he was a lot of fun, and I liked the scenes where, you know, when he played the vampire, he played at the camp. That scene where he does that kind of weird moon dance thing after killing those cops. I thought that was fantastic, and I just wish there'd be more of him.
Yeah. How about you, Craig?
Yeah, I can only really go to Matt Smith as being anything that I really enjoyed about it. It's not that I hated everything else, it was just I didn't think much of any of it. It was, I mean, that climactic action sequence was borderline incomprehensible.
What was it about bats? I don't know.
Well, they foreshadow the bats twice. So you've got the bit in the lab where he's like, they think I'm a brother to them or whatever. And then you've got the bit where there's a news report where everybody becomes aware that there's a possible copycat to her second vampire. And on the ticker, it says bat infestation in sewers or subway or whatever it is. It's written there on the screen. And I remember noticing it on Friday when I watched it, thinking, well, that's going to be important. But why can Morbius control bats and
exactly? That's the whole point. I don't get it.
Morbius asked first.
If they've been like controlling bats against each other, that would have been quite cool. You know, like using the kind of there were things like they flew on the sound waves and stuff. That was quite cool. You know, if they've been using the sound, the bat sonar, and using the bats against each other, you know, make it more interesting. But it was just like he controls some bats and I guess kills Milo. Don't really kind of get what happened there. It was a completely nonsensical ending.
He stabs him with the
poison. Which was signposted. But I found the bats thing didn't make sense. That scene again, you said, you know, where they're on the newspaper reports, suit straight after the two agents have seen Milo on the security camera. Suddenly that security camera footage is on the news. Like, are they really bad at their jobs, or is it, you know, it's just to progress the plot? That's what was frustrating. There were so many nonsensical moments in the movie that were in place of more interesting material.
How about stunts and VFX set pieces, all that kind of stuff? This is what everyone comes to watch these movies for in some ways, is all the spectacle of it. I didn't think there was a lot here at all that was at all special. Everything that we'd kind of seen before in different ways, it was nothing unique here. I didn't also understand the visual approach that they took to the super abilities, in the sense that like when they were moving at high speed, you'd get this kind of weird traily blur, like these kind of like coloured tendrils of colour off each person's body, and I didn't understand what that even was. It was like they were Nightcrawler from X-Men.
Yeah. It reminded me of Nightcrawler, but which was much, much better. So it's like, if you get a riff off a really good superhero movie, do at least as good as that.
The echolocation stuff, that the radar sense, that
the bit,
cool.
The bit when you use the sound from the train to fly in front of it was quite cool. There were moments where like, oh, this is doing something quite fun or quite interesting, but to say just need more of it.
I don't even know what was happening there. So it was the sound of the train that he was flying on, was it?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. I thought it was like, I thought it would make more sense that he'd be behind the train in the slipstream of the train. I can't quite understand why he was at
but
the front.
But then he was just flying normally later, not being carried by anything, so...
It was still... It looked cool anyway. Cool moments. It looked cool, so...
Quite a dark movie, so I thought maybe they'd just done those colours because you could tell where people were on the screen, essentially. If they didn't do that, it'd just be like black-looking people against black cityscapes half the time. You couldn't tell what was going on.
The action climax, it was, as I said, borderline incomprehensible. It's the stuff that they accuse the MCU of, that people accuse the MCU of the coating everything in a grey sludge in the final act, which I don't necessarily agree with. I think it's just something that people pick out. Everyone says that the climax, or not everyone, lots of people say the climax of No Way Home is difficult to make out. I didn't have any trouble when I was watching it, so I don't accept that criticism. But in this, it is, I can't see anything. There's shapes moving about, I guess. I don't know which one's which.
I'd say, go back to some of the positives. Yeah, I mentioned earlier, I like the way there's lots of use of red on like shape, red light, a glow against like the cityscapes and stuff. That was kind of that gothic vampire thing. It happened a lot in the movie. It kind of drew me in. So in terms of like the cinematography, I really like that aesthetic of the movie. That was a kind of a key theme running through the movie when it was playing to that kind of gothic vampire tone.
We haven't mentioned the director at all. So it's Daniel Espinosa, who's a Swedish director. He directed Life, actually. I don't know if you've seen that one. It's like the Alien ripoff with Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, the one that could have been Venom, but wasn't, where everyone's like, is this a Venom prequel?
Yeah. So it's strange that they hired him. So I think he does his best, but it is very generic. Struggling with a bad script. There's only so much he can do, I think, as a director. But
I'm guessing this got ripped from him at some point and they just did whatever.
Yeah.
Because he's been pretty, not hostile in the marketing, but he did that Q&A where he just spoiled the whole movie.
Oh, right.
Okay. Pretty much. Yeah, so it seems like he's just, I'll do the marketing, but who cares? It's almost that, Josh Trank was definitely hostile about Fantastic Four, but it's like, they took my movie and destroyed it. But whereas this guy's like, they did what I expected. I suppose at least I got paid. But I feel like because that sometimes happens with these, or it often happens with these, where the studio have a certain idea of what they want, and a director has a different idea, and then the studio's like, right, you're gone, and we're going to just edit this down into whatever is we want from it. And that's definitely what's happened.
It felt like the movie was shredded to pieces. I don't know if that was because of the kept moving around. I mean, I think the whole with the Spider-Man connection, and we'll talk about the end credit sequence in a moment, I guess, but there are things about that where I felt like I reckon this was quite a different movie. Maybe had this been released even before No Way Home, it might have been a slightly different movie, but I think it changed somehow. I think the change that kind of forced upon it made it a lesser movie too.
Would you welcome a sequel to this, Morbius 2, or like a crossover directly with Venom? Or you've kind of fed up already with Morbius, Craig?
Nah, God, no. Don't want another one.
I don't need to see another movie at all. I mean, I know it sets up with end credits, with Martine becoming the vampire, which was blindly obvious. But there's nothing in here that you go, oh, I really want to see how this develops. There's nothing on the line. With Venom, I really enjoy Venom. I didn't think it was a great movie. Had there been one movie, that would be fine. But actually, I thought Tom Hardy was a much more engaging lead actor than Jared Leto. And the stuff with Venom was fun. So I was looking forward to seeing more of that in the second movie. When I think about Jared Leto's Morbius, and for that matter as well, Adria Jonah's Martine Bancroft as well, because I assume she'll be in the second movie. I can't think of, I want to see what happens next with these characters. There's nothing there where I go, that could be interesting, because I feel like the most interesting thing I want to see is Matt Smith's Milo and he's gone. So what's the point?
Well, I suppose they could do a Venom 3 and just have Morbius in that movie. So not do a Morbius 2, just do it through another Venom sequel.
Or, if he turns up, or if they cross over and bring him somewhere into the Blade movies of the MCU, I'm okay with the character popping up, but I don't think he needs his own movie.
Maybe Kraven will haunt him.
Yeah.
That could happen.
Well, I know for Podcast 616, you always do a rating out of 10, which I forgot to do at the start. So what would you give it out of 10 to start of interest, Craig?
4. I gave it 2 stars, so that equates to 4 out of 10,
okay.
I suppose.
And Baz?
I don't think it's terrible. I think I was entertained enough, and Matt Smith was good, so I'll give it like a 5 or 6 out of 10.
Jeez.
Oh God!
But maybe I'm being very kind.
Maybe I did a few days. You've had a couple of days to let it sink in. I'm still fresh out of cinema bars, so maybe.
Okay, I'd probably give it a 3. I think I'm on a 3. So it wasn't good as expected, essentially, Morbius. But never mind. So sadly, that's all we've got time for. Thanks, Baz and Craig, for coming along to share your thoughts. Where can we hear more from you online, Craig?
Mainly you can hear from me on Neil Before Blog. That's neilbeforeblog.co.uk. I have reviewed this movie and review a bunch of other stuff. There's an attached podcast where the most recent release was our news roundup for March 2022, but there's more stuff coming there. When we made this, I crop up here and there. The next place I'll be showing up is on We Are Starfleet for the coverage of Star Trek Strange New Worlds when that starts in about a month's time as we record. So excited about that. Personally, for Neil Before Blog, Facebook and Twitter, Neil Before Blog, type it in, you'll find it, no problem. And personally on Twitter, here's my contractual obligation. I'm found under Nemesis4909, which is a Star Trek and Resident Evil reference, because it became a Star Trek reference later on. So there we go. Contractual obligation fulfilled. I will get paid.
How about you, Baz?
Yeah, so I'm on various podcasts and We Made This. I'm actually back on podcast 616 next week to talk about Moon Knight episode 2. You'll find me on various podcasts, and I've been on Real Talk a few times as well. And I also am the host of the TARDIS Crew, a Doctor Who podcast I host with my son Ben. There's a nice connection there with Matt Smith. And Craig, you're going to be on with us to talk about Legend of the Sea Devils when it airs later this month as well. Yeah, which should be great. And also, I launched a new podcast, A Dream Given Form, where I talk about my favourite show, Babylon 5, with We Made This co-host Luke Winch. You can find me on Twitter at Baz Greenland, and I'll probably also mention as well, again, Dot Two Related Connection. My new short story, How to Negotiate with a Sentient Tree in Shoreditch, which is a Dot Two story. It's just been published through Canon Jar Books as part of a story of unit stories called Operation Wildcat and other short stories as well. So you can find that at Candy Jar Books.
Excellent. You can find me at DanOwen79 on Twitter. Short and sweet. And remember, whether you're listening to Podcast 616 or Real Talk, we're both part of the We Made This podcast network. And a taste of other podcasts you may like to subscribe to can be heard in just a second. But for now, thanks for listening to Podcast 616.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Academy Watch, a prestige film podcast.
A lot of these other characters that are not human have these bizarre names, non-Anglo names. And then we have Paul.
I mean, I kind of wanted a Brian or a Gary to rock up next to him as well.
Like a Gary, like a real like Scouse guy from...
I was about to do a Scouse accent, but then I thought better of it.
Yeah, let's leave the Scouse. We've already offended the Pauls. Let's leave the Garys alone.
Pick a disc.
Everyone was sort of caught up in the cowboyness of the post 9/11 world. Like to an extent, in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, George W. Bush basically took on the role of John Wayne. He was like, "I'm going to find them and I'm going to catch them and I'm going to put them to justice," that sort of thing. And I think for a long while that had kind of been accepted, and that was okay, you can lead us forward, you know what you're doing. And then, you know, some other things began happening and other wheels started turning, and that's where I think this album managed to land. Was there were a load of people that were thinking about, is this right? Should we be doing this? And it kind of validated that school of thought, because it said it in such an eloquent way, and it's very, very pointed at, you know, its administrations and its message of anti-war. Not necessarily anti this war, but anti all wars.
Right in the childhood.
There's other boy bands, include the likes of McFly. McFly was a big one.
I remember McFly.
McFly busted.
McFly was shit busted.
Oh, that's a controversial.
I could name five or eight. Well, three or four.
Here we go, because I'm a big busted in McFly.
I could name three or four busted songs. I could name you no McFly songs.
Name me some busted.
Year 3000. Shit me, I'm sure I know more than Year 3000.
Glad I crashed a wedding.
Yeah, that one.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.
Okay, so we can't leave without talking about the two bonus scenes, the very special scenes that you get because you've been such good boys watching the movie. So you're rewarded at the very end with two postscript scenes, and they don't make you wait very long either for these. So you get them quite quickly. I don't think anybody would stay, would they, for the entire length of the credits of Morbius to be delighted by what we find. So you do get two scenes. So big spoilers, obviously. So with the first one, it's relatively interesting in the sense that it directly connects to Spider-Man No Way Home. You kind of see the tear in the fabric of reality that we saw in No Way Home in this world. And a character, a very familiar character, materializes in his prison cell. And it's Adrian Toomes, a.k.a. the Vulture from Spider-Man Homecoming, played by Michael Keaton, who we kind of knew would be in this movie because he is in some of the trailers. So it's kind of strange that he's been bumped to the end scenes because it seemed like he was going to appear in the actual body of the movie itself, but I think they rearranged some of the scenes around, I think, is what's happened here. So how did you feel about seeing the Vulture sort of dumped into the Sony universe? Is that a good thing for Michael Keaton? What do you think, Craig?
It's a really weird one. They obviously cut and retooled everything they did for Michael Keaton in the film, because the stuff in the trailers, it's not anything like this. He is in a prison cell, so it's implied that, I guess, it's when Morbius is in prison, that's when they chat. That's probably when that's supposed to happen, but we'll never see the real scenes. But yeah, he's come over from the MCU for some reason. And then there's the news report that says, some guy called Adrian Toomes appeared. We don't know who he is. We have no idea how he got here, so we're just going to let him go. That seems normal. Let's just let him go. And then the next scene, he turns up and he's got all his Vulture gear, which confused me more than anything else because, A, he didn't build it. It was the Tinkerer that built it in the Spider-Man movie. B, it was made out of alien tech. So how did he do it? How did he build it? So there's no alien tech in this universe. The only aliens that we know of are the symbiotes. And they don't have any tech. They're gooey life forms, so they don't need tech. So I suppose there's advanced spaceflight tech and whatever, but at the same time, yeah, how did he get those resources together? And he mentions Spider-Man, and Morbius doesn't reply with, who the hell is Spider-Man? Which implies there is one in this universe, which makes me wonder, since it was set in New York, where was he during all of this? Or is it all happening during the events of No Way Home and he's away, he's nowhere to be found? I don't know. It's just confusing and nonsense and bizarre that they got Michael Keaton to agree to do this, because is he not slightly above this? Maybe he just likes to be the multiversal traveller guy because he's going to be doing it as Batman if they ever release The Flash.
But you spoiled the second scene, Craig. I was going to get around to that.
Well, they're the same scene, yeah. Essentially, aren't they?
What do you think, Baz, about these scenes?
Basically, what the hell was that? it's a weird one, isn't it? Because I mean, Mike Keaton's fantastic, and he was good as Adrian Toomes in the first Spider-Man MCU movie. I kind of feel sorry for that he's been dumped over into this universe, and I'm assuming that's... And now, as I'm kind of theorising here, is that we're seeing Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, as well as them putting people back into the other universes, people from the MCU universe got dumped into other universes too, and that kind of caused some issues. That's my guess, anyway, based on that. That's the only reason for him to go into another universe. But the scenes are kind of painfully awkward and don't really make a lot of sense. You're absolutely right, Craig. Where did he get this technology to become Vulture? It doesn't make any sense at all. So I'm assuming Morbius was originally set in the MCU, and then they made a change because he got delayed. I'm assuming because of all the delays and delays and more delays, they decided actually not to put it in the MCU and make it in the... Maybe Venom was originally going to be part of the MCU until those kind of like bizarre but quite fun end credit sequences to Carnage and then No Way Home. So it feels like now they've really settled on Venom comes from another multiverse, they had to completely reshift Morbius from the MCU to this universe.
See, I don't think it ever was that. I think it was a cynical marketing gimmick. I think they put Michael Keaton in this to make people think it was set in the MCU.
It doesn't make any sense then. It doesn't make any sense at all. I don't get it.
In the original cut, you would have Michael Keaton turn up and they would never have named him, I guess.
Yeah.
But there's an awful lot of weird cynical stuff going on there, because there's the background elements that are not in the film anymore. For example, him walking past the mural of Spider-Man on the wall with Murderer written on it and stuff. All that's gone. So I feel like they were trying to manipulate us into believing that this was in the MCU when it never was.
Yeah, maybe.
Even the poster says a new Marvel legend or whatever, as if to trick you into watching it, to believe that it's connected. And it turns out it is, but I can't believe that Kevin Feige is letting these be connected to the MCU. Not that it'll damage the MCU in any way, but maybe it's part of the deal with Sony for Spider-Man. It's like, well, you have to let us reference your universe in our crappy
films.
So
they can use a Spider-Man villain, maybe that's why. I mean, this is what I've had.
I was going to say, I think what it is that Sony obviously make the Spider-Man films. They just are allowed to have them take place in the MCU. So they like own the rights to Spider-Man and I think Vulture. So they're just their characters. So they're allowed to like bring the Vulture into this. It's not stepping on the toes of the MCU. Just the MCU have now given them a nice reason why they can do it with the whole multiverse thing they're doing with the recent films. There's like an explanation as to why they can take a few toys and play in their own kind of sandpit, essentially. And it kind of works. And it's like a compromise, I think. So it kind of is okay. It would be a lot worse if they didn't have that to fall back on as an excuse for what's going on. One thing I would say, though, is that, it's strange that Morbius doesn't react to the word Spider-Man when he's told that. So I can only assume that, Jared Leto was on a green screen somewhere and he just didn't know what was... just stare up at the camera and I think that was kind of added on very much later. But one thing I will say is that, isn't it possible that what they could do now, given the success of No Way Home, they could easily just say that Venom and Morbius take place within the universe of The Amazing Spider-Man.
That's exactly what I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, and bring back Andrew Garfield, who was a big hit in No Way Home, and just say, okay, and this is Andrew Garfield back as Spider-Man. We've got our Spider-Man with Venom and with Morbius and with Kraven the Hunter and Madame Web and all the rest of it. I mean, that makes sense now. Madame Web's maybe in a future film if Andrew Garfield will also be in there as Spider-Man. And then you've got two Spider-Men in cinemas, you know, and you can choose which one you prefer and go and see both films. And that seems to be a popular thing online, isn't it? People are calling for anyway.
Does Andrew Garfield really need to be associated with this dreck, though?
No.
You know, he's already had trouble with the reception of his version of Spider-Man. This will bring it all back. It's, he's in this, but oh God, it's not good, is it?
But I think if they're smart enough, that's how they'll do it. I was going to say exactly the same thing, Dan, as well. I reckon this is the perfect opportunity because of the hype and because of the buzz around Andrew Garfield in Spider-Man. They kind of wrapped up Tobey Maguire's arc. I don't think we'll see Tobey Maguire again unless there's some kind of weird multiverse thing. But I think this is the perfect opportunity to continue in some form Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man. It could be cut to BS. It could be wishful thinking. I don't know. I would quite happily see Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man again, as much as I really enjoy Tom Holland as well. And if they use Spider-Man, fantastic, and use his Spider-Man, because I think there's nothing that's been established in Morbius or Venom that would contradict the first two movies. And obviously you've had the multiverse thing established as well. I just hope that Andrew Garfield gets something good to do, because I thought what I enjoyed the first movie, the second one, was not great, was it? And so I think it'll have to be a really, really good movie, and I'm not sure he's going to get a movie as good as his encore in No Way Home.
Maybe Marvel will help out. Yeah. Maybe that's something they can sort of say, okay, we're going to help you out with your Amazing Spider-Man 3 and just to make sure that character's kind of still got a bit of quality to it. But it would be maybe a strange thing marketing-wise, because obviously you want Tom Holland to be associated to Spider-Man. So would it work having two Spider-Men in the cinema?
Maybe it depends on what happens to Tom Holland's contract, because there's talk about this second trilogy of kind of college movies, university movies. And maybe if that doesn't happen, then they can fall back on Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man. I don't know.
They'll probably flip to Miles Morales eventually in the MCU if they continue that association. But it's not canon anymore because they removed all reference to it. But the images in the background were of Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man. But as I've said, that's just manipulative. They probably weren't intending to do anything. Plus, it'd be confusing because of the Venom that existed in the... I mean, it's all confusing. But it's confusing because of the Venom that existed in the Tobey Maguire universe of movies. So it's, well, we've got another one that's kind of the same, but not the same.
Which is why it'd work with... We had the reference about aliens in No Way Home as well. Having that in Garfield's movie would actually work quite well. I think it's nicely set up. Where it actually happening is a different matter. But I think it could actually work very, very well.
Yeah, I'd actually be interested to see Miles Morales, actually. That's probably a better idea, because I don't think Andrew Garfield was that interested, to be honest. I think it was a nice thing for him to do No Way Home, but I can't really see him signing up for a movie, if I'm honest. Now it's like a different phase of his career, isn't it, all of that? And but Miles Morales would kind of fit with the tone of Sony have got going on here, a bit different. I can maybe see that happening, and I don't think it'd be a problem, to be honest. It was, it kind of solves everyone's issues, isn't
or
it?
Or Garfield handing over the reins to Miles Morales, doing that kind of, I don't know, who knows, yeah, but I reckon they need, I mean, maybe that's what Spider-Woman movie's going to be about, which has been mentioned as well. I think they need some kind of central hero, because that's a problem with these movies so far. They're too many anti-heroes, not enough heroes.
Well, Craig might know this because he's more knowledgeable, but isn't Madame Web somebody who can see into other universes? I think I've heard that. So she's got a connection to the multiverse as well, doesn't she?
Kind of, yeah. When they did the Spider-Verse event, she was aware of the web of reality. But initially she was just a psychic, but the 90s cartoon, which you referenced earlier, Baz, she was like a cosmic being. In that, so they could go down that route, I suppose. I don't know. I don't think Sony know what they're doing. Their plans didn't remain consistent throughout the making of this film, never mind in the future. If they did another Sony hack, it'd be like, well, no one knows what's going on over here. So just let the rights lapse and give them back to Marvel at this point, because it's a mess. You don't know what you're doing.
Okay, well, I think we're going to have to leave it there, if that's okay. So I think the end credit scenes were, I think, the best part of it, in a sense. They definitely inspire more discussion than the actual movie.
They were
definitely very flat and strange, and I think it would have been better just to have Adrian Toomes in the prison scenes with Morbius, where he was originally intended, I think. It would have worked a lot better.